Robin Hood Radio and the Robin Hood Radio Network is proud to present Leonard Lopate at Large, lively hour-long in-depth discussions providing overviews and context to topics usually covered in partial measures. His guests include leading thinkers, scientists, artists, economists, farmers, historians, authors, and politicians. Mr. Lopate is a Peabody Award winner whose numerous honors include 3 Associated Press Awards and 3 James Beard Awards.
Welcome to Leonard Lopate at Large. I'm Leonard Lopate. As the song goes, spring can really hang you up the most. There's another one, spring is here, why doesn't my heart go dancing? Well, I guess that's because the season brings so many problems with it. Spring cleaning, most notably, but also thoughts about air conditioning and general repairs brought about by the long winter months. Joining us now with advice on how to deal with those problems are Lawrence Ubell and Alvin Ubell of Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn. Their company has inspected over 30,000 structures for over 2,000 attorneys, numerous real estate organizations, architectural and engineering firms, and private citizens. And they're here now to offer their expert advice to you, our listeners. You can call us now at 212-209-2877 to talk to them on the air. That's 212-209-2877. Alan Larry, welcome back to our show.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thanks.
Now, I mentioned air conditioning. I guess this is the time of year people start thinking about it. Should we be cleaning them now before we actually need to use them?
The best time to clean it is now, because especially if it's a window unit or even an outside unit, there are leaves stuffed in them from blowing around. There's a lot of dirt, schmutz, and everything else that goes into those machines. And the idea is to clean them out as best you can, and before you even plug them in or turn them on, and then turn them on. This could save a lot of money for repairs, because if the machine starts up with all that garbage inside the machine, it could do damage to the machine itself.
So the cleaning is mostly just cleaning off the filter?
The filters is one thing, replacing them or cleaning them. Some units.
Should you wash them?
You can. You could use very good is to use shampoo is the best kind of thing. You just if it's a spongy kind of filter, you could put them into the sink, put a little shampoo in it, rinse, and then rinse them out thoroughly and put them back the way you took them out.
A couple of things that you do want to take into consideration is, well, first, the reason you want to do it now is it's not hot yet. So if it's not working, it gives you some time to either replace it or repair it. So you have some time before we get into the dog days. The second thing is that this equipment always has an issue with it as far as dirt. If you've left it in the window all winter long or in the sleeve, as most people do, when you do start it up, stand off to the side so all the dirt that's inside doesn't blow right on you. Okay, so stand off to the side a little bit. It's also important, like Al said, to clean out the outside units if you have a split system. But more important, springtime is a time for self-reflection, but it's also a time to reflect on your home if you own a home. The snow's gone. Hopefully the mud is gone. Walk around the outside of the house. Look to see if there's anything unusual. Things hanging off. Things that weren't there when you left last time you looked at it. This is a good time to take a look at what's going on with your building or your home. Or even, I have to say, if you live in an apartment building and you're a part of a co-op board, especially if it's a self-managed building, small building with only 2 to 8 people, this is a time to do that reflective type of evaluation on your home.
Yeah.
If you have a private home, is insect infestation a big thing now, or is that something that comes later with the hotter months?
No, now we're getting pretty soon into the termite swarming season. So if all of a sudden you go down into your basement, you see a bunch of wings on the ground all over the place, it means that the nest has released all the potential queens of the new hives. And to do that, they lose their wings. And so if you see all these wings all over the place, definitely call your exterminator to take a look at that. As far as other insects, I think that is generally pretty even throughout the year.
Yeah, but the thing is, the thing is be proactive and be critical of what you're looking at, and do it now in the spring, because as the temperature rises, so will the costs of repair go up. The idea right now, all these mechanics are waiting for the telephone to start ringing. Later on, it's going to really start ringing off the hook. So the idea is get that work done now in the spring.
Also, one thing that, since we are here in New York and there are a lot of apartment dwellers, a lot of them have window units and a lot of them put them in themselves. And there has been a few cases where people have dropped their air conditioners out their windows. A couple of good tips on that one is the cord, either tie it around the leg of a bed or a table or a chair or even your own leg. The thing doesn't weigh more than you, so it's not going to take you out the window.
But then you'd have to stand there all day and all night.
No, until you put it in place.
Oh, I see.
No, while you're installing it, okay?
Or so if when you're looking at it.
While you're installing it, and everyone's always nervous, oh, I'm going to drop, especially if you're up a few floors, you could really hurt somebody. Tie it around something, that cord, and if you happen to drop it, at least it'll hang by the cord, and it won't go all the way down to the ground. So there's a good tip.
Yes.
A reminder to our listeners, our number here, if you want to speak to Larry and Al Ubell. The number is 212-209-2877. You wanted to say something else?
Yes. Well, also, right now, people should not... We're looking at the property around and be critical. And one of the things has come up over and over and over again every single year is the public sidewalks in front of your property. Even if you're a tenant of a building and there's broken sidewalks in front of your building, even though you don't own it, you should tell the landlord, you should tell the superintendent that these sidewalks have to be repaired. And if they don't respond, call 311 and tell them that there is a need for repair.
And whose responsibility is repairing the sidewalk?
Well, it depends upon the building. If it's a one- or two-family house, generally speaking, the city is responsible, but not always. There's certain situations. But then if it's an apartment house or a commercial property, the owner of that property and the proprietor is responsible for the repair of that sidewalk. And just to look at sidewalk, if the sidewalk is loose, it's deteriorated, if it has differentials greater than a half inch someplace, or things can be picked up and taken away, that is a violation on the Department of Transportation. It has to be repaired. This could reduce the amount of accidents. Street walk accidents are almost all day long. Our firm gets calls on that almost two or three times a week on just accidents from sidewalks.
And the sidewalks go into disrepair because of the winter months?
Yes, because what happens is water gets under the concrete, it freezes, it expands, and pushes up the concrete, and then it breaks. And so what happens, you'll have one flag that is higher and lower, or even the cellar doors are deteriorating, people who have commercial property.
Tree roots are a big problem also, especially in residential neighborhoods where the trees push up the sidewalks. Those are also need to be repaired. Even though the tree doesn't let you off the hook.
Yes.
We want those trees to be healthy and their roots to grow, but we don't want them to kill people.
Well, it is one of those things where you do, a lot of people do repair those. They cut the roots away, and then within 5 or 6 years, the roots grow again and start heaving it back up again. It's a problem, but you still have to take care of it because it's also can injure people.
Yeah, the accident you save may be your own accident.
Okay. The other thing I want to get back to on air conditioning is that people who have central air conditioning units that have older units, those units are starting to age out in the sense that the refrigerant that they use that we all call Freon is being phased out because it's bad for the ozone layer, as we all remember from the 80s and 90s with using aerosol cans and so on. The EPA and the government has many years ago decided to phase that out, and every year there will be less and less of this material, this refrigerant, available. So it's known as R22, and in several years, the only available R22 will be what's reclaimed, so the price will be astronomical.
So is there something else that you can use instead of Freon?
Yes.
They work just as well with the air conditioning?
Well, the problem is it's they've changed over to R-410A. The R-410A does not work with the old unit, so you're going to have to swap out your compressor and your
in other
fan
words,
coil.
You need a new air conditioner.
Basically,
it's a very old
basically, yes, but because the price of the refrigerant will be so expensive, it might be cheaper just to swap out the equipment.
We have a call. Our number again, 212-209-2877. Hi, you're on the air. Speak with the U-Bells.
Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Me, yes. I have a large air conditioner installed in the wall. It's built into the wall. It's a 220-volt unit. It is totally dead, and I'm just wondering what to do. I can't go to the store and buy an air conditioner. It's just too big and too heavy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering what's the best step forward at this point with this wall space that's totally useless now.
Okay, and how are you cooling the place now?
I'm only cooling certain rooms upstairs. The downstairs, where this large air conditioner is, has just been lying dormant. And
is this your own house?
Yes.
You know, you might want to just swap over to a ductless system or a mini split, as they're called now, the Mitsubishis, the Dankens, or Fujitsus, where you would just close the hole up, get rid of that, and just put a compressor on the outside, which would use that same 240-volt circuit, and then hang a fan coil or evaporator coil on the inside. If you've ever seen any of the Mitsubishis or whatever, they're very compact, and it will do more. It will do the same work, but also be way quieter because you won't hear the compressor anymore.
It'll be smaller.
It'll also be more efficient.
Far more efficient,
and it will reduce your electric bill when you run those units. So that's a good thing to go forward to replace and remove whatever you have there.
And the prices are dropping. So for you to do all the work to try to find this replacement model, which may not even be available, this would be a much better workaround.
Yeah, right now, because the weather is still warm, still cool, nobody's air conditioning, and the air conditioning contractors are ready for you.
Yeah.
Yes. Whom would I go to? Whom would you recommend?
Well, you can go a couple of ways. You can go on one of – first, I would just start Googling mini splits or mini split systems or ductless systems. Or you can actually go to either Home Depot or Lowe's. They all sell them. They all have their own contractors that are somewhat vetted. You can go to.
Is this going to be expensive?
I'm going to say that the unit that he would have to replace would probably be a couple of grand. I'm thinking that this will probably be in that same range, $2,000 to $3,000, but it will be far superior to what he has now.
And you say he'll be saving money on electric bills and things like that.
Yeah, as far as the gentleman is talking about, is we recommend. We can't recommend any particular contractor because that would be a conflict of interest for us to be involved with a particular contractor.
But more important with that, when it goes sour, we don't want them blaming us.
That's touche. I like that. Absolutely.
You know, it's enough I have to worry about my own work. I don't want to worry about someone else's.
Right. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
No problem. You have a great day.
And again, the number 212-209-2877 if you want to speak to my two guests, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn. You're listening to Leonard Lopate at Large on WBAI in New York. Since we're talking about electric bills, I wonder about all the alternative ways of getting electricity. Do you recommend putting solar cells on houses where people can do that?
Well, that's
Can we do that if we have an apartment?
Well, as far as an apartment is concerned, that's a difficult thing. You can't really attach things to a building that you really don't own.
I guess a co-op.
The short answer, which my father. The joke around the household is, why use a couple words when 100 will do? Okay? But the answer is, yes, we agree with putting solar voltaics on your roof. I think it's a great idea. It turns your house into an energy producer. So when you go to sell the house, your house is worth more because I know to you it was an expense, but to the person buying it, it's just part of the whole package, and now they're producing energy. Fantastic. As far as owning a co-op or a condo, Yes, you can do that too, but you have to work it out with the whole building, and the building collects this all this energy as a whole, and then they divide it up amongst the shareholders, and everyone gets a benefit there. So again, you're turning your building into an energy producer. The one thing now, which I have not done the research, so I'm a little ignorant on this, is what are the benefits now under our present administration? It might be better to hold off maybe a year and a half, and hopefully things will change. And so the new administration will probably be more into increasing our, you know, reusable energy goals, and maybe get better benefits.
Tax benefits. There were tax benefits in the past. Have they been eliminated in the new
again,
tax law?
Again, I'm woefully ignorant about what's going on with that now. I just know that the Department of Energy and all that has been scaling things back. I remember when Jimmy Carter was the president, he put water solar panels on the roof. As soon as Reagan came in, they took them all off on the White House. So there tends to be that push back and forth between Republicans and Democrats. That being said, we know that here in New York, because we have a Democratic administration, both state and local, there may be tax credits. You need to look into it on your own. But as far as how it helps you personally save money and for the world, I think they're fantastic. And I have to say, I've been putting on my building, but I do want to do it, and it's one of my next big goals.
Well, we can't do windmills, and that's probably because the president says that they drive people crazy.
Well, I could see that because he stares at them all day. But that point notwithstanding is, yes, you can do windmills too. You see them all the time. They're these spirally things that spin around, and they don't look like a windmill. They look more like a turbine. Mm-hmm. And so there's one on the FDR Drive. You could see one as you drive southward.
There's also one on the BQE in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right by the tunnel.
The tunnel.
Right.
Okay. We have a bunch of calls coming
Great.
In. So let's take one of them. Hi, BAI, you're on the air. Hello? Are you there?
Okay. Hello?
Yes.
Hello.
Oh, yeah, hey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, what's up?
It's an air conditioning question.
Go ahead.
Yes, so in Stuyvesant Town, and you know it's old, 70 years old. And,
yes.
And so we had one in the living room. We just had one installed in one of the bedrooms. The other day I wasn't home, and it's a Friedrich, you know, you can only use kind. And it's a thick cord
mm-hmm.
attached to the, outlet.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a pipe there and the radiator, old school.
Yeah.
And he left it there, and it was so hot the other night. Since we're not using it, I pulled the plug and wrapped it around or underneath, like the one in the living room.
Yes.
So is it very dangerous when the heat is on right there to leave it? I thought it was not a good idea.
No, actually, radiators of that type will only get up to maybe, and I'm going top end here, maybe 230 degrees, which is not very hot, because if you take into consideration what you set your oven to when you're cooking, which is 300 to 350, and even if you took a piece of paper and put it in your oven at 350, it still wouldn't start to burn yet. So it's not a great idea to have it lying on the radiator, but it's not going to cause it to melt or anything like that. I'm not horribly concerned about that. But like I said, if you can somehow tie it up away from the radiator, that's a great idea. On the other hand, let me say this out loud for all those other people who have electric radiators. Electric radiators can get really hot, like a toaster, and those could melt the wire. So, you know, steam radiators and hot water radiators, not as big a deal. Electric radiators, a very big deal.
They can go up to thousands of degrees.
Yeah, it can get really hot. Okay?
Oh, okay. So it's all right. And I don't have to, I don't even have to tie it up. I can just leave it on the windowsill underneath the air conditioner when not in use.
That's
okay,
great.
Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Thank you.
Let's take another call. WBAI, you're on the air.
Oh, good afternoon.
Hi.
Hey, what's up?
Hi, what's going?
I would just like to ask a question. First of all, I want to thank you for being there for the consultation.
Mm-hmm.
And thank Leonard Lopez for having you. Now, my question is, how often do radiators need to be bled or flushed out?
That depends upon what kind of radiator it is, whether it's a hot water hydronic system or whether it's a steam system or whether the radiators are electric. You got to clean them. That's the first thing.
Well, let me ask the question, because he is asking a specific question.
Yeah.
What kind of heat do you have?
My heat is coming from a radiator.
But is it, okay, so
is it steam, or is it electric,
or is it hot water? You don't know.
I don't know, to be honest.
Okay, so let me
wait. Is there a valve on the engine?
No. Yeah. Let's do a little 20 questions.
I'm sorry. Okay. I'm suddenly joining you in the business. Okay.
How many pipes are going into your radiator?
It's just one.
Okay. So you have steam. No, they don't have to be bled, and nothing has to be done to it. The two big things that you have to do is make sure that the valve on the pipe that goes into the radiator is either all the way open or all the way closed, and that the steam vent on the other side, I'm sure you have a little vent on the other side that's usually chrome, silver, something like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sometimes needs to be replaced. If it starts spitting water and constantly hissing, then it's broken. It should only vent air momentarily. Sound kind of like sounding like this. Shh, click. Shh,
right,
click.
Okay.
Okay? If it's doing that, it's working fine. Leave it alone. Don't touch it. And you can vacuum around it. That's always a good idea.
Yeah,
Go on.
There's also another thing that you should know about. That's a steam system. The valve that is on that you could turn to turn it on and turn it off, the idea is turning those things on or off or lower or higher does not change the temperature of that radiator. But what does happen is a room gets very hot, and what happens is somebody shuts them off, and the radiator fills up with water. That's the biggest part, and all of a sudden you turn on the heat again, you turn it back, and all of a sudden banging takes place with your radiators. So those valves that are on the radiator that adjust the steam radiators are not for controlling the temperature in that room. The way you control the temperature is that the air valve on the other side, which is chrome, which we talked about just a moment ago, is you may have to get a different aperture. And they have numbers on them. And the lower the aperture, the lower the temperature. The higher the aperture, the higher the temperature.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
I think he's gone.
Okay.
Thank you for your call. And again, we invite all of our listeners to join in the conversation at 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877.
I want to reconnoiter back to the air conditioning.
Please.
If people are updating their air conditioning systems or even their homes and doing a full house renovation, I do like the mini splits and ductless air conditioning units. They're interchangeable. If you have no other choice and there's no other way to put a duct system in, but if you can put a ducted system in, a traditional air conditioning system, I prefer that because it tends to be a little more efficient. It tends to be a little, it tends to be quieter, and it tends to be less visually intrusive. Having all these things hanging on the walls in every room sometimes is not the most visually pleasing thing to have. I do like the traditionally ducted system, but if you don't have a choice, or you're only, like for instance, let's say you have, a house with an attic room, and to bring an air conditioning unit up there would be difficult. Putting a ducted system up there is good, or in a cellar, if you need to have air conditioning, the ducted system would work well also.
We live in a city where the housing stock ranges from a couple of hundred years old to very recent.
To a couple of days old.
and I would assume that means that for our listeners, the range is everything from I open the window to having some very modern HVAC system in their house. So what happens if you have a really old system? Can you modernize it? Can we ask our landlord if we have a landlord to modernize it?
Well, I have to say that the majority of the older housing stock, everything that's older than pre-war, air conditioning wasn't even a thought. There's very few of these buildings that have any original air conditioning units because it really wasn't a part of our life, and really what the technology was not. If air conditioning of that kind back then was only for the extremely wealthy.
So that's when we started putting window units into those.
Right, when those that started places. Happening in the late 40s and 50s when window units started becoming a consumer product. That's why we're talking about it. If you're taking a older building, whether it's a townhouse, brownstone, or what have you, and at brownstone and retrofitting it for a air conditioning system, then at that point, you're going to do a major renovation, and you're going to figure out a way to do it the best way. One thing I want to say, no matter what system you go with and how you air condition, whether it's ductless or traditional ducted or what have you, the most important thing is zoning. Zoning is not really to save energy, even though that is one of the byproducts of it. Zoning is for comfort. Zoning makes all the areas in your house or your apartment the same temperature. So, for instance,
well, how do you know where one zone ends and the other one begins?
I'm getting to that.
Oh, okay.
I'm getting to that. So, if you have a four-story building, you want to make each floor a separate zone, because it's very challenging to get two floors or three floors or four floors in a vertical building to all be the same temperature. Like, for instance, in my house is only two stories high, but my upstairs, which is smaller than my downstairs, has a two-ton air conditioning unit, where my downstairs, which is much larger, has only a ton and a half. Why? Because all the heat loading from the sun is on the roof, and all the heat from inside the building goes up to the second floor and stacks up there, and it gets very warm. So it's very important. I got to tell you, every time I see people trying to do two floors or three floors on the same unit, the up floors are always hot, and the downstairs floors are always freezing.
Because heat rises.
Exactly.
Well, the heat rises, and also the cold also is heavier, because the molecules of air is closer together. So therefore, it goes down. So an air conditioning that is developed on the upper floors actually goes down to the lower floors. In the heat, it's just the reverse. The heated air is lighter because the molecules are farther apart, so they float up to the upper stories.
And the top floor, Larry, you were saying,
yes.
You also have the roof. So you have this, it's caught between the heat that's rising and the heat that's coming in.
Right, so you need to have more air conditioning availability to you. I have to say that these days that we have, when they're building all this new construction, they're trying to save money, and they try to combine heating and air conditioning together. And the problem is everything you do for heating, you do 180 degrees opposite for cooling. And so it always does one thing either better than the other, and you should have, like I have in my house, two separate systems, air conditioning and heating, and they're completely separate.
And even hot water should be separate from the heating system.
We have a lot of calls coming in. We
Great.
Hope that the callers will be patient, because we want to take you all. So let's go to the first one that called in. Hi, BAI, you're on the air.
Hi. Hello?
Yeah, what's up?
Hi, guys. Great information about air conditioning. I'm wondering, are you well-versed in air cleaning, too? I have a son who's 14, a little bit of an allergy problem.
Mm-hmm.
And for all year round air cleaning, do you recommend any kind of room units? The room's about 15 by 15, hopefully a HEPA unit. But there's so many units out there. It's very confusing.
Well, that's a difficult, as far as picking a unit out, but the electronic filters seems to be
actually, he's talking about two different things.
Yeah, clean air.
Yeah, I know. But what he's talking about is trying to get particulate matter out of the air, and the electronic filters are not as good for cleaning the air as a HEPA filter, which is a high-efficiency particulate filter. I'm going to say I'm, again, not one of those things that are a part of my life, so I'm not that knowledgeable about it. But I don't... You want to have your air filtering system separate and apart from your heating system. So if you have a forced air system, you don't want to put a HEPA filter on it, because you can end up burning out the fan motors, because you're making the fan work way harder.
What about an air purifier unit that people...
I know a lot of people put them in their basements. Yeah, and that I would recommend something like that. Or you can actually have a whole house air filter put in, which would just draw air in, kind of like a vacuum cleaner in a way, but just larger and slower moving, and just constantly filtering the air of the entire house.
Yeah, but the electrostatic cleaners mm-hmm. are really the best, most efficient, because they actually charge the particulate matter that's in the atmosphere, and sticks it to a plate that has a negative impulse, and those really clean out. But you have to buy one that is self-cleaning, that when the senses that the plate gets filled with dirt, it actually washes itself out. They're quite expensive, but for someone, I believe, I'm not really sure, but that could be part of a medical situation if you're subject to the particulate matter malady. So you have to get, say, a doctor to, say, write you out a prescription for it, and maybe it's tax-deductible.
But I want to talk on one other thing, because if your child has high allergy issues, one of the biggest sources of allergens in a household is vacuuming. And
right.
And
so, HEPA filters in our vacuum.
Yeah, but I have to tell you, the best thing to do is to buy a vacuum cleaner where it exhausts outside. Because even, I'm going to tell you, even
with those tubes that go all the way out the window?
Yeah, well, whether you're doing it with a central vac system or you have some kind of movable system, if you can have the hose go out the window and exhaust the particulate outside, the problem is, even with the HEPA filter, the problem with indoor air pollution is when you're vacuuming, it's not just dust mites, but the dust mite droppings, which actually are smaller than the air filters and actually gets through it. And that's what we breathe in. And that's sometimes after you're vacuuming why your eyes are watery and you cough and all that stuff. So if you can get a vacuum cleaner that actually exhausts to the outside, you'd probably be doing a lot to improve on your indoor air pollution issue.
You're very good.
Great information. You know, my eyes tear up because I'm angry that my wife tells me to vacuum. That's why I start crying.
Well, hey, I hear you. I hear you, brother.
As long as the solution doesn't involve us getting rid of our pets, I'm going to try everything that you suggested. Thanks so much. Thanks for the great information.
No problem.
And
take care.
Thanks for your call. And as I said, we have lots of people calling. Our number is 212-209-2877. Please hang on. We'll get to you as soon as we can. Back with Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, who are Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York, and regular contributors to this show. And we take your calls when they are here. Our number is 212-209-2877. Got a lot of people calling in, so let's go to the next one. Hi, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hey, what's up?
Enjoy the show very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, thank you.
And I have been maintaining this 1927 Colonial and trying to keep it energy efficient.
Lots of luck with that.
We converted from oil to gas 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
New roof. Even needed the plywood 3 years ago, January 2016.
Mm-hmm.
When they did it, and before I was considering solar panels for the future.
Right.
So my roofer said, oh, you're thinking of solar panels, so I'm going to make sure I give you extra strong rubberized membrane on the south-facing side of the home.
Uh-huh.
Came to me the thought, especially now with you guys on the radio again, I said to myself, why do I even need to put it on the roof? Perhaps like you see on the highway or other places, you see solar panels at somewhat ground level.
Yeah.
If there's a spot on my property and the village allows it, I'm in Nassau County, is that something that makes sense?
As long as you have an unobstructed, you know, southern exposure that's not shaded by trees or other structures, the 10 feet or the 10, 20, or 30 feet that the sun has to go extra after it's flown a million miles, I don't think it's going to really make much of a difference. No, it doesn't make a difference. Actually, most of the solar farms are on ground level. They're not high up in the air. By all means, the reason we use the roofs is because it is a wasted space in a lot of ways.
It's so convenient.
Yeah, and what I would like about when I eventually do it on my house is that putting them on my roof won't affect the look of my house.
Well, there's another factor, isn't there? The panels on the roof lead to easier wiring than if you have these panels somewhere away from the house?
Yeah, you would have to run underground conduit or overhead conduit from there to your electrical, where your weatherhead is or your electrical service connection is. And yes, that's another thing. That's why they put on the roof. But I also want to say one other thing. You mentioned something about how he said I gave you an extra special roof. The funny thing is once you put the solar panels on the roof is probably going to last much longer because it's no longer going to be hit by the sun. The sun is probably the biggest deteriorator of roofs, more than wind, more than water, more than snow and ice and all that other stuff. Baking in the sun is what really beats up our roofs.
Yeah.
And once you put the solar panels over it, you're not going to have any sun hitting it anymore.
True. I was just concerned about poking holes and then now new access for water to get in because water always finds its way.
You hear that.
Yeah, but the panels that they use today, especially ones that are made for the roof, they're panels that are made specifically for the roof, usually have a caulking bead that goes all the way around and it's quite monolithic. The only different problem with having it on the roof is there's a difficulty in washing the panels every so often, which you can get a hose. One that is at ground level, you can take a hose and wash it off, or maybe they install now self-sprinkling washing devices together with the solar panels. So there is a lot of technology that is taking place with these solar panels, and you have to pick the one that is designed for roof structures and to make it easy to clean and maintain.
But it is important that the solar panels stay clean because a little bit of dirt covering over 10% of the panel will drop the efficiency of the panel by quite a bit. I'm not going to throw numbers out there that I don't know, but the last time I took a class on that, just a little bit of dirt on the panels will reduce their efficiency quite a bit, almost by 20, 30, or 40%.
Yeah, because there's an electrostatic charge that takes place with the panels that actually draw particulate matter to stick to it.
Yeah.
Now, I'm curious. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you.
I'm curious about the fact that we've known about the power of the sun as a radiator of energy since you gave me a thing here. It says since A.E. Becquerel, actually 180 years ago, told us about it, 1839.
Yes,
so what's taking us so long?
That's the exact question I asked. What's taking them so long to make this so efficient and inexpensive for everyone? Well, there are a lot of interests that want to destroy it. The coal industry, the oil industry, power central systems, utility companies. They don't want us to produce electricity on our own because that's going to put them out of business.
Let's take another call. Hi, BAI, you're on the air.
Hi, great show. I love it when you guys are on.
Thank you.
I have a question about heating. I have a 25-year-old hot water system baseboard. It's a natural gas from Con Edison. And I've been told that the flue pipe has all perforations and it's a hazard, and as opposed to replacing the flue pipe, being it's 25 years old, I should replace the whole system completely. Now,
How old is the system again?
25 years old.
Okay. And is it hot water, steam, or forced air?
Hot water.
Keep going.
Okay, I was recommended these new type of combi units where your domestic hot water is heated and you get your heating system water out of it. They put it on a wall, and it's very small, and it's the latest rage.
Yeah.
My question is, what do you guys think of those?
Okay. First of all, I'm going to let you know what I think of those in a minute, but let me say this about that. The question is, to reline your chimney, how much do they want for that?
Well, I didn't get a price. The whole flue pipe going from my basement to the top of the roof was naturally a foot above the peak.
Right.
With double wall flue pipe,
mm-hmm.
I was told is very cost
sensitive. Oh, you mean, so your flue pipe right now is a metal pipe?
That's correct.
It's on the outside of the building?
No, sir. It goes through my basement, crawl space, and then up. The chimney.
Right. Okay. No. Okay. It's a prefabricated chimney, and the building is basically within a chase that goes all the way up the building.
That is correct.
Okay. I'm going to say it all comes down to dollars and cents. The bottom line is, if the heating system is working, it keeps your building warm, and you're getting, you know, your domestic hot water, and that's working. To find out what the cost of the chimney replacement or the repair of the chimney versus a new boiler, you would have to just make that assessment and figure out what your amortization would be over a 10-year period. Because if you don't make your money back in 10 years, you're wasting your time.
Okay.
Want to say one more thing. As far as the high-efficiency units, I like them a lot. The combi unit uses a plate water heater to heat the water. They work great. I have a high-efficiency modulating condensing boiler in my house. I love it. When I eventually – my water heater dies, I'll eventually change over to an indirect water heater. So I do like them. But you just – what's the cost of putting in this new boiler versus what's the cost of replacing the chimney? That is the question you need to ask.
In other words, whether it's cost-efficient to do it, and when does your recovery take place?
Okay.
Okay.
Right. I got one estimate on it.
Yeah.
Over $11,000.
Okay. Ooh. So now we have a baseline. If whatever the cost is of replacing your chimney is substantially less than $11,000, I'd go with the chimney replacement. Because 20 years old for a hot water boiler is not – 20, 25 years old is not old. Hot water boilers – hot water boilers last a really – what brand of boiler is it?
It's slant fin.
Those are great boilers. The funny thing about slant fins is the outsides tend to look bad, but the insides are in really great shape. As opposed to the Well McLean's, where the outsides look really good, but the insides, you know? Why don't you figure that one out and get back to us?
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you. Both of you have also given expert testimony in various courts. How much of that involves stair hazards?
Well, stair hazards, it seems to be, as far as people getting injured and not only injured but lose their lives, is the amount of accidents in the United States is second to automobile accidents.
Really?
Yes.
People
falling down the stairs. When you fall down a set of stairs, forget that it's a stair. It's like falling off of a mountain. All those steps are almost like the stone sticking out of a mountain, and you hit each step in the hair and all the way down to the bottom. If a person falls down 20 steps all the way down to the bottom, they are banged up.
But
really
how
badly.
Much of that is the responsibility of the person going down the stairs, for example? Because when I go to the subway, I will hold the handrail. Then I watch these other people, often much younger than I, just zoom down without touching anything. And I know that if I did that, that would be kind of dangerous.
Yeah, well, if a person doesn't take advantage of a safety device in a building, in other words, take a hold the handrail or something like that. But sometimes a person could fall down a stair that they think is in good shape, but yet the steps may be inconsistent. In other words, one tread is bigger than another, one riser is bigger or smaller than the other one. And this screws up your psychomotor function, and therefore that could cause a trip hazard.
Sometimes risers are of different levels because they want to make the stairs meet the next floor, and suddenly we're 2 inches too long, too short.
Somebody took the wrong kind of measurements and didn't know how to do division in order to get the right measurement of each tread and riser. This is a problem. Also, missing handrails. It's a known thing in the stair industry that a stair without a handrail is an accident waiting to happen. There's also a door that could swing out over a stair. The ruling is that when you have a door, you're supposed to have a landing or platform on both sides of the door equal to that of the width of the door leaf itself, so that when you open the door, you're stepping on a platform. When you're about to approach the door, you're stepping on a platform. And then you commence to go descend the set of stairs. The most critical point of most stairs is at the head of the stair, the top of the stair, because if you trip there, you're all the way find yourself at the bottom of the stair. But stairs, when they are perfect, they're dangerous. When they're imperfect, they're critical.
Wow. But I don't want to – I didn't like the connotation of victim blaming here. I would probably say from my experience that when people trip on steps, 99% of the time it's a step's fault. Okay. Even if they're zooming down without handrails. And remember, you know, at different points in your life, you know, you tend to go up and down steps a little bit differently. But I have to say that one local news channel once took a camera and pointed at a set of steps in the subway, and just one after another, after another, after another, they all tripped. Why? Because, like we were saying before, the tread heights were inconsistent. When you step off a step or step up a step, your brain takes a measurement, and it repeats that measurement every time until it gets to the top of the steps. That thing is called the psychomotor function. And so that your brain is telling you what to do. And when there's an inconsistency in those heights, you trip. The other thing I want to say is, like he said, is an accident waiting to happen. A steps without a handrail is like a car without seatbelts. That you know, we don't think about those. We don't think about those handrails almost every day. But when you need it because you stumbled, you hope it's there, and you want it to be securely anchored to the wall.
Yeah, my guests on Leonard Lopate at Large are Lawrence and Alvin Ubell. We will take some more calls, but see what you want to say.
One other thing about stairs, just to give a little bit of trivia, the technology of stairs dates back over 2,000 years by the name of a guy by the name of Vitruvius in the court of Julius Caesar. He figured out a method of using the Pythagorean theorem how to make steps equal from top to bottom, and nobody wants to know about it.
Mm-hmm. Some cultures have still never really adopted stairs, or they see it as a Western or a silly Western idea. Let's take another call.
I know those
steps. BAI are on there.
Those steps are so bougie.
Well, then they're the Russian steps. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hey, well,
go ahead.
How can we help you?
Very quickly before my question, regarding the guy who wants to put his solar cell on the ground, I've read about those things being stolen, so that might be a risk factor.
Good point.
That's an amazing point.
Anyway, my question is, my air conditioner, a regular residential window air conditioner, it's kind of old. I keep the filter clean. Mm-hmm. It smells kind of mildewy from time to time. Can I get Legionnaire's disease from a unit like that?
Yes, you could. It's highly unlikely, but yes, you could. But if you're getting a moldy smell, it's probably because the air conditioner is not draining fully. It's probably draining. It probably drips water out of the back. But it always has a little bit of water sitting there constantly fermenting, if you will. Since I'm a beer brewer, I like to use the word fermenting. But anyway, it probably does build up bacteria and so on in there. And I think I would probably try to shim up the front a little bit so you get more positive drainage out the back of the unit, and that may take care of it. Also, maybe at the bottom, if you could see where the water collects, spray in a little fungicide,
chlorine bleach.
A little bit of chlorine bleach with a little bit of soap in it, and let it rinse through, and that might help also. But not too much. Water it down. Don't just put in pure chlorine bleach. We don't want to melt anything.
Let's take another call. Hi, BAI, you're on the air. Another time?
Yeah, no.
That's it?
No.
Oh. Hello, you're on the air.
What's up?
Yes, I have a question going back to heating.
Yes.
I heard at one time about thermo heating where they would come and just dig into the ground, go down 40 feet or so, and that the water was to circulate. Can you expand upon that?
Yes.
Is it really a efficient process of heating? And also, in regards to if you have vents.
Hold on. Let's go with the first one first, okay? As far as geothermal heating and air conditioning, around here, the groundwater is not warm enough that we can actually heat with it. It's not like we live in Wyoming or even by Yellowstone National Park where you have hot springs all over the place. And in there, they do take the hot springs and they do circulate it through the house and they do warm the houses that way. I remember when I was on my Western trip many, many years ago and the water coming out of the wells were actually hot and they had to actually cool them off. And you're sitting on the toilet and this warm air is coming up from under. Very disconcerting. But anyway, what we do use the geothermal for now is using that water for warming and cooling heat pump condenser pipes, and so you would use that water in the air conditioning to cool off that water, those pipes, or in the wintertime to heat them back up again. And that is very efficient. And it, and what we do is you drill a well at one end, and then you have to re-drill another a waste well on the other side of your property. I've only seen this in my 35, 36 years of home inspection twice in New York City. Only twice, and they were great. They were great systems, but they are hugely expensive. So
okay,
and what was it? She had another question. Was she still there? Are you still there?
A second question in regards to vents. Like old houses had a process where there were, I guess, like hot air came through the vents.
Yes,
not the radiator, but through actual, and they had pretty coverings.
Yes,
you know, iron. Coverings.
Yes.
Now, is that efficient in regards to, let's say, installing a boiler and using the hot air versus the board heaters that one would place in each room, which is just a long, thin radiator?
Well, that's a great question, because the question what she's really asking is which is more efficient, forced air or circulated hot water. And her thing about long radiators, everyone know about the baseboard radiators, but baseboard radiators is just one type of radiator. There are cast iron radiators, there are convector radiators, there are flat panel radiators, there's radiant floor heating, radiant wall heating, radiant ceiling heating. There's so much. Forced air heating is probably the most wasteful of all the different types of heating system, because statistics show that between 30 and 40% of your heat or cooling is wasted through leaks in the ductwork. And also, all the older buildings that have these ductworks built into the walls, some of those shafts are not even lined with metal, so all you have them is in the brickwork, so you're recirculating all the dust from the brick and mortar throughout the house. So my opinion is, if you can, put in a circulated hot water boiler. Now, like the previous caller, where they put in a high efficiency unit, it hangs on the wall. It's almost between 92 and 98% efficient. They're called modulating condensing boilers, and they're great. And if you have the option to go in that direction, do it.
And we have time. We have time for one more call.
Okay.
But it has to be quick.
Okay. We got quick.
Hi, you're on the air.
What's your question? And make it quick. Hello.
Hello.
Okay.
We lost them. As far as the ductwork is
concerned. Yeah, okay, yeah. Make it quick.
Yes, I have a air problem.
Yes.
I have pavers, bricks, and, of course, the slab.
Yeah.
What's happening is the stairs are separating from themselves.
Yes.
What is the method of repairing that, and what kind of cost?
Is this an outside brick stairs?
Yes.
Okay, and so you're having... So what's happening is that water is getting into the stairs and freezing it apart.
And expanding them and changing the tread and erosion.
Unfortunately, I'm going to say, without seeing it, because this is sight unseen, I'm kind of imagining what I think the problem is, maybe not what the problem is that you may end up having to remove the treads and landing and rebuild it. Maybe what happened is when they built it, they put too much soil underneath and it collects too much water, or the water can't get out.
Or there's no weep straws.
Knee poles or weep straws. So mm-hmm. I would
What's
have
a weep straw?
Well, what happens is, if you know, masonry is very, has a lot of porosity to it.
It's porous.
It's porous, and it brings in moisture through capillary action. And the water is sitting there, and they have to give it a way to get out of that, so to dry out. So since it takes the way of gravity and capillary attraction, you've got to put weep holes or weep straws in order for the water to drain out. If you leave that water inside and it freezes, the ice starts to expand, and it destroys the stairs. And this happens
time. What I'd like to do, my email address is larryubell@gmail.com. Take some pictures. You could send it to me, and I'll be more than happy. Again, larryubell, no dots, no anything, @gmail.com. Okay?
Thank you very much.
No problem. That's for anybody else listening, too, if you have any questions.
You have any parting thoughts? We turned out to get that call done rather quickly.
Next time we're on, we should show all of America.
We got another 3 or 2 minutes there.
2 minutes.
Oh, is there anything else we want to say? Well,
yeah.
Well, I do want to say that I think that the that the construction I'm seeing, some of it has been really good. The people are getting better. There has been a lot of problems with some of the rehabs, like in Bed-Stuy and Crown Heights. And I have to say, maybe it's just me being picky and it gets back to the people, the powers that be. But I think they're starting to do slightly better work. And I think people are getting a better product these days. And it heartens me to see that. So that's really a good thing, especially with all the houses I get into.
Why do you think there have been problems? Is it just people who are not ready to do the kind of work?
No, I'm talking about contractors.
Yeah, that's what I meant, the contractors.
Yeah, contractors.
Because they didn't know what good was.
Yeah, right. That's the biggest problem. Years ago, the skill levels were very, very high. The skill and putting stuff together were beautiful. Really, they cared about it. And then as time goes on, where money was more important than the quality of the job, all of a sudden the quality started to drop over the many, many years. And that's what I saw happening around the whole city of New York.
It's not a coincidence that the term we use now is developer, not builder.
I've noticed in some cases with houses that are available in places like Bed-Stuy, one and two family houses have been broken up into five or six units, and then people buy them and want to break them back down to one or two units.
Yes.
So is it harder to get them back?
That's more of a political question, because sometimes the city doesn't want to reduce the number of housing units. And so if you have – there has been a problem in Park Slope where there was this SRO, and no one could develop this SRO because the city wasn't giving them permission to break the SRO back into a one-family house, which it originally was when it was built.
Yeah, that's a problem.
It's more of a political question.
What's really going around the city right now, you see a lot of people who have one- and two-family houses are taking their cellars and using them as an extra rental apartment, which is illegal. It is illegal to live.
If you have a boiler down there?
Well, it's actually illegal to live and sleep in a cellar area. And the problem is,
what's the difference between a cellar and a basement apartment?
It's when the mean distance between the floor and the ceiling is above curb level, it's a basement. If it is below the center line, is below curb level, is considered a cellar. And that's the differential. And that's the way the code is. And the reason for that is that a cellar is a dangerous place. First of all, you have, like Lawrence just mentioned, about a boiler. You have all kinds of mechanical equipment. You could have noxious gases take place. You could have, in the middle of the night, all of a sudden your cellar fills up with water, and you get out of the bed, and the child drowns in the water that has a ruptured pipe. There are so many accidents that happen in cellar areas. It is dangerous. All those people who are renting to them, or those people who are living in them, please, please, get out of there.
My guests have been Alvin and Lawrence Ubell of Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn. And we will have you back in a little while.
Yes, about 6 weeks or something like that.
Okay. Sorry, I look forward
to
that.
We'll go forth and fix, save energy, money, and
do it safely.
And that brings us to the end of today's show. My great thanks to Reggie Johnson, who was at the audio controls, to Charlie Morrow, who composed our theme music, and to my executive producer, Jesse Lent, to all of them for their contributions to the show throughout this week.
Leonard Lopate at Large comes to you
on Saturdays at 4 and Tuesdays at noon. You can subscribe to Leonard Lopate at Large podcast on iTunes and by clicking on Robin Hood Radio's archive program site, which is robinhoodradio.com. You can also check out Leonard Lopate at Large Facebook page. We hope to see you next week.